You are listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the Podcast Network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, August 11th, 2010. This is episode 144, Wells Tech Road Trip, Whidbey Island, Washington. Happy to be back and happy that you have joined us again for another edition of the Wells Tech Podcast. My name is Martin Spriggs, and joining me as usual, Sally Draper. Good morning, Sally.
Hi, Martin. How are you this morning?
I'm well. It's the dog days of summer, as they say around here, at least. The humidity is oppressive, and the days are long, and I'm glad I'm inside today.
Yeah, and we'll be thinking of this when it's 35 below and we're shoveling snow this winter. So
enjoy it while you can. Just talking about that with a staff member here. It certainly beats the alternative. So,
So we enjoyed our church picnic this weekend, and it was a heat advisory day, so we didn't stick around a real long time. But had an outdoor worship service and a picnic in the park this weekend, and it was a lot of fun.
So, but it sounds like more like penance than fellowship.
Yeah, it got warm after noontime for sure. We weren't around the park too long after that. We were kind of soaking wet with sweat, so ready to find the air conditioning.
Was Kevin the good pastor and wore his robe for the service?
He did wear his robe, and he was quite warm. So came home and changed clothes immediately. So
thank goodness for dry cleaners.
Yeah.
All right. But we are going to a little cooler climate on our Wells Tech road trip. We're going out to the Great Northwest to talk to an old friend. Although we've never met, our virtual friend John Shoesmith, who is in or close to Yakima, Washington. The last time we talked to John, we talked to him about closed captioning, right? And he is now on, what is it, Whidbey Island, Washington. I think we've got some cool photos that we can share, too.
Yeah, John has a neat job working in a lighthouse there. It's kind of one of the barrier islands as people are coming into the Seattle port. He has a lighthouse job. And we do have some fun photos. The morning that we talked to John, he was kind of fogged in. And so he sent us a photo of the fog, and it's a pretty much gray picture.
When you forwarded it to me from him, I thought, why is she sending me a gray box?
Yeah.
But that
Very
was basically the view
Washington.
From his window, yes.
Yeah,
but the conversation was crystal clear, and he had some great information or follow-up information to the world of closed captioning and a few other topics. So without further ado, let's talk to John Shoesmith from Redeemer in Yakima, Washington, in our road trip to the Pacific Northwest. Joining us today on the Wells Tech Podcast is our good friend John Shoesmith from, Whidbey?
Whidbey Island.
Whidbey Island, Washington, the state of Washington. And you're looking out your window now and you can't see nothing.
No, I just got into work. Just for your listeners, I'm in a lighthouse that was built at the same year the airplane was invented. And it overlooks the Admiralty Inlet, which is the only way you can get down from the Pacific Ocean down into the Seattle area and the Puget Sound. And so they built a series of lighthouses, and this one is still standing. And I have this being able to see just fog, and you might even hear a few ferry boats going by because they can't see either. And you might hear some horns going off.
Sweet. So what are you doing in a lighthouse these days?
Yeah. Well, it's sort of a strange thing. I used to do work in museums and places back in Virginia. And that was before I moved to Arizona. And then my wife moved to Yakima Well, we all moved to Yakima for her residency, and Yakima's in Washington, central mm-hmm. Washington. And that's how we got involved with Redeemer. And we were there for 3 years during her residency, and then we came out here. And I saw this position open to have someone coordinate programs out of this lighthouse, and we're connected to Washington State University, and they do a lot of research and community stewardship type things with big volunteer organizations. And so I'm sort of doing that, and it's an interesting development, but to make it short, I'm working out of a lighthouse somehow. So,
so you manage projects or programs for nonprofits or for volunteer That's organizations? Right. Okay.
That's right. And there's several of us. There's a group called Beach Watchers that protects the beaches, and right now is seal pup season, so they make sure that people don't get too close to seal pups and prevent them from getting fed, and there's tidal pools that need to be protected, and they do research and all kinds of things like that.
Okay.
And my particular part of the job is kind of operating this as a museum with volunteers, and our job is educating the public and working with school groups and doing research, that kind of thing.
Well, our Wells Tech...
Maybe we can plan a real Wells Tech trip. That sounds like a fun
field
trip for us.
That's right.
Right, and I'll have a job for you, too. We're working on the downstairs, redoing that, so maybe we can integrate some technology down there, and we'll keep you gainfully employed, that's for sure.
Well, our Wells Tech listeners probably think your full-time job is more related to closed captioning, because that's
right.
What, when we talked with you last, was probably, I don't know, year and a half ago. That was really the subject of the conversation. We felt that a road trip out to Washington would be a good step for us to, first of all, get the Pacific Northwest involved, because we didn't have a rep from there, but also to do a little revisit on some progress that's probably made in the industry about closed captioning, right?
Right, yeah. I think when we started, closed captioning on videos wasn't well known.
Mm-hmm.
Google had a way of doing that, and I don't know how I found it, but we just started captioning our sermons. And nowadays, you know, you can see a lot more of that. It used to be that you could go on Google, for example, and type closed captioned, and you would only see us and some advertisements from people who do captioning,
mm-hmm.
or you know, meetings or churches or whatever. Now, if you type in closed caption sermon in Google, we appear, and so does Torrance California. That's Maryland's group. But still, we're probably the only synod or only Christian group that captions sermons on the Internet that I know of. And that's just from doing searches on the Internet. But also, YouTube at the same time has been trying to do some captioning stuff, and more videos are being captioned, just generally speaking. So
uh-huh.
It's an area that, you know, maybe more people are getting into.
Just a quick shout-out for Marilyn Sherrod, who's down there in California, and who's a student of yours, John. And I guess we could also mention at this time that you not only figured out how to do this, but you documented it for Wells on our Wells Tech Wiki. And I know Marilyn, for one, who's taken up the gamut and run with it and is doing closed captioned children's sermons and regularly putting those out on the web as well. And just kudos to you. We'll certainly have a link in our show notes for anyone that's interested in the step-by-step instructions you provided. They're just really well done out on the Wells Tech Wiki.
Thanks a lot. Yeah, she's really taken off with that. I mean, I think she does something almost every week. Her husband tapes them, and then they take it home as a project, and she's been putting things on for at least a year now.
Cool.
Nice.
What a labor of love.
Yeah.
So the industry is playing a little catch-up here on closed captioning, and YouTube, what, about 6 months ago, something like that, decided that they were going to try and automate the closed captioning process. So how is that, in your opinion, how's that working?
Well, it seemed that they announced it for a long time before it actually went online.
Yes.
And then when it did, people were saying, well, it works, it kind of works. I gave it a shot a few times. We were doing a series called Ask the Pastor where you could, you know, ask Pastor Schwartz any question on YouTube and he would answer it. And they were short little videos. And I tried the last one like that with the automated function, and it just could not figure out a lot of words. I mean, I don't mean just the theological words, but common words, and it would just put something else in place of it. So you ended up with something that didn't make a lot of sense, and then you had to go back, and it would provide the text that it came up with, which was nice, because then you can go back and fix that. But that's sort of time-consuming, and I was thinking to myself, you know, it's probably a lot faster just to do it the old way with a captioning program, you know, like Subtitle Workshop, and just do it yourself and then upload that, you know, so you wouldn't have to do so many corrections.
Yeah.
Now, recently also I did a video, and I noticed that that automated caption or option wasn't even available, so I wonder if they've pulled it off.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, and that was just a video I did for here. It was a clam digging class, and I wanted to see how well it did it with these things, and it wouldn't give me that option. So.
Well, Sally and I have had a lot of fun with Google Voice's transcriptions of voicemails, and I'm thinking it's probably the same technology. And again, it can be a total disaster. I mean,
But I'm glad they're trying it. You know, it's one of those things where you think, well, it could be horrible at first, but maybe they'll work it out. And then, that happens, and it takes no time to do this stuff. So, you know, maybe they will figure it out. I'm sure they will, but it's right now it's sort of definitely it's in its infancy, and it has some issues.
Yeah, I don't totally get it, because I have an Android phone, which is another Google product, and the voice recognition on that is awesome. I mean, I can press a button, I speak, you know, find such and such on a map or whatever, and it gets really even difficult words correct. So they must be using some kind of different translation engine there. And I think it'll all come together, but for now it sounds like it's still going to be the old-fashioned way, so to speak.
Right. Yeah, and there's other transcription programs out there for documenting stuff. Like I listen to my wife use her thing, Dragon, I think it is, without any trouble.
Right, from Nuance, yeah.
So, interesting.
I was going to ask about that old-fashioned method. I know when we talked a while ago, it was a time-consuming method for you, John, and I remember when you first wrote to us back at the beginning of the Wells Tech podcast, you mentioned spending 20 hours a week captioning one sermon from the previous Sunday. So I'm wondering if you can give us an update, maybe a little bit more hope that it's a doable project.
Yeah, I know that can be a killer right away to anyone who's interested in doing this. It think, oh my gosh, well, if it takes that long, forget it, you know. But the way I would do a caption video was a few hours here and a few hours there in the evening, when everyone was asleep, and maybe a couple hours, you know. And you can save your work as you go. And it might take you a while, but in the end, you have a video that goes online and stays there for possibly years. It does take a while, especially when you're starting, when you're first learning how to do this stuff. But as I went along, it takes probably 5 or 6 hours to do a 20-minute sermon. Another thing I can say about that is that sermons are the most word-intensive part of your service, and it's conversational speaking almost. There's ways that we can use captioning and not have it that condensed. I've been thinking lately that, you know, all of us in Wells who do videos online, whether it's podcasts or on their church site or YouTube or whatever, we're all doing the same thing. We're putting sermons online. And it's possible, I think, to do much smaller videos with captioning that takes very little time, like a 5 or 6 minute video only takes not even an hour to do. And, you know, you can always break it down. I was just reading Matthew at Home again. This time I understand a lot more about it than the last time I read it. But it's composed of pieces. You know, you have one parable after another. You could do a video on Jesus's parables even just one of them, and do a whole series like that, going through Matthew or any part of the Bible, and captioning each one separately, you know. And it wouldn't take you that much time. And I also think, in a kind of a lessons learned kind of situation, sermons, you know, that's a particular crowd of people that look up sermons. I don't think most people do searches on YouTube for sermons. They might look for certain topics. So suppose you had a video that was 5 minutes long on something like, what is the Christian viewpoint of what marriage is, or, you know, any number of things. What is justification? What is baptism? I think those kinds of videos would be more popular. It'd be easier to prepare.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think the shorter snippets are probably more appealing. When somebody does a search and pulls up a video that's, you know, 25 minutes long, the interest probably dips right away. But if you're looking at a, you know, 5 or 10 minute little talk on grace or communion or marriage or divorce or whatever, I think that's probably more a better outreach tool, and you may stand a better chance of getting that message viewed and reacted to than anything else.
Right.
Yeah. You made a couple other comments as we were kind of going back and forth about some topics that we would share with you. One of them is audio quality. And Sally and I have talked about that a lot, too, that that is where you probably need to spend the most amount of time, whether you dip into closed caption or not. If you don't have the audio quality thing figured out, you might as well not post video.
Yeah, yes, I agree, because I think when the sound goes bad, you lose your audience very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a troublesome thing because, you know, if you're doing, let's say you're recording sermons in your church, most of the time you have to figure out some way to deal with a radio microphone that itself has problems. You have some sort of captured device like a CD recorder or burner in the back that has to go through a soundboard. It's usually a daunting thing to try to resolve, and a lot of times you hear issues with feedback and noise coming through somewhere in the system. There's ways you can fix that, too. I mean, you could have a digital recorder and a lapel mic right on the speaker and dub that in later in the editing program. That's something I did on that clam digging video where there's a lot of noise and stuff. And you definitely don't want to use the sound from the camera itself. You'll get all kinds of noise, and it's distracting. It's very hard to get good sound, but if you can do it, it's you'll get a lot more views and a lot more interest if you have good quality sound.
Mm. Now, you've had, at least Redeemer has had some success in getting some publicity, you know, out of your technology advances. We saw a news broadcast featuring Redeemer, and I don't know if there were newspaper articles and those kinds of things. Any tips for congregations maybe wanting to get a little bit, you know, of press around what they're doing?
Wow. Well,
how did you guys do it?
We didn't really. It was sort of, in those situations, it was just by having a lot of material on the internet, and people would discover them. So
that's probably a good start, huh?
Yeah, and because we never went out and said, "Hey, do you want to do a story on?"
Right.
It just sort of evolved, which was kind of nice.
And you're doing some other things besides video. You're doing podcasting as well, so you've got a lot of irons in the fire and coverage there as far as the
podcast actually was a nice surprise, because around the time that started, Google's video program was being disconnected. And that's an area too where you can put material online, and it stays. It can stay there for a long time, and you still get a very active amount of people downloading it you know, just as many as now as were in the past, you know, even if you put them on a long time ago. So we have a podcast with 25 videos on it, and they're a little unique in that they're videos. They're designed to play back on iPods or iPads once they're downloaded. And some people have written to us and said, you know, hey, I like that. I can take this stuff with me in a portable device and go places with it. So it's not on your website. It's not a static sit down and watch. It's stuff you can take with you. And that's the most appealing thing about this podcasting technology, is you can take it off somewhere and enjoy it in the airport or, you know, on the train or whatever, on your commute.
And what kind of content is in there, in those?
It's the same videos we put on our website.
Okay, so sermons.
It has been sermons and things, but they're getting pretty good views. And it's hard to tell through iTunes because they don't have a tracking way of their own, but I can tell what the viewership is by the web logs on our website that material comes from. It's linked to that. And strangely, in the last year, or at least the last half year, most of our downloads from the podcast have come from China.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, most of the viewers are in China, and the United States is second.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah. Got a global ministry going on there, almost touching Canada and reaching out to China.
Yeah, these things go in little spurts, and it went crazy for a while, and then it's and you can, you know, it just kind of goes in different areas, and it's I don't put a lot of trust in the web logs and things, but you can, when you put everything together and you can look at it, you can see where the stuff is coming from.
Yep. So what's next for John? Are you just kind of continuing what you're doing and do it better, or just keeping an eye on where things are, or what do you have in mind for the next few years as it relates to ministry?
Well, I like the Ustream stuff that's going on. Personally, I really like, one of my favorite things is what's been going on with the seminary with their services that you can watch Ustream.
Yep.
And we tried something recently. It didn't go over very well because we had a horrible connection at the church. But the idea of having live classes on Ustream with some interactive quality to it.
Right.
So we had a web page, basically, and it had a Mibit chat on the top, and then it had the Ustream dialogue that comes off the Ustream site embedded next to it, and then the video screen. So, and the idea was you could watch a class and you could ask questions at the same time. So you could send a text message to someone who was there at the church, and they could pass it on to Pastor Schwartz and he could answer it. In the future, I'd like to do that more, and as soon as we get our internet connection going, that would be the next thing for us, I think. But otherwise, we're going to keep going with the podcast. We might do some smaller informational videos. The captioning will keep going. And then we'll just watch and see what happens. Everything changes, and we'll see if we can adapt.
Very good.
I think with you being a distance member of Redeemer now and not able to be there in person, probably gives you a lot more sensitivity to doing more distance things like that. So that's exciting to see you develop those things.
Probably advertise that we don't have a Wells congregation on the island. So, Martin, if you can make that really loud in your audio.
Okay.
Yeah, so we have to travel a bit to get to, we go to an ELS church most of the time up in Mount Vernon, but it's a drive and a ferry ride, and you know, so but yeah, you're right, it gives me and you can still do this. It's kind of neat that you know, the Yakima's over there on the other side of the mountains, and I can still do exactly the same thing I was doing there from here on the internet. So you can do a lot of remote stuff, and you can,
if
do
it works in Sleepy Eye.
That's right. If you can do it in Sleepy Eye, you can do it anywhere.
Collaborative work with other congregations anywhere in the country. So
right.
Excellent.
That's a possibility, too.
Very good. John, thanks so much for taking some time out of your day for us. Appreciate it. And blessings on your continued work there in Washington.
Oh, well, thank you, Martin. And always, it's great to hear from you guys. So.
Awesome. Thanks again.
Yeah, thank you.
Always good to talk to John. He had a lot of information. We have a lot of follow-up information, another number of resources that are available.
Absolutely. And primary on that list, as we talked about in the interview, is a link to our Wells Tech Wiki, where John's shared just a vast amount of his knowledge on the topic of closed captioning. We also have a page on the wiki dedicated to congregations that are posting closed caption videos. And if you're doing that kind of work, we'd love to add you to that list as well. So please update the wiki.
Yep. And it's free to anybody. You just need to go to wellstechwiki.wells.net to both read the material and add your own, because I think that's what makes it mostly valuable to me. It's not so much the stuff that we put up there, but the real life experiences, so to speak, of people who are trying this stuff out and have feedback on their experiences with microphones and with software and closed captioning and all that kind of stuff.
Absolutely, and that's why we really appreciate all the work that John put into his contributions to the wiki, and you know, just a case in point for everyone getting involved and sharing with the class.
You did an awesome job. Thanks, John. And thanks for your time again, sharing some time from the Lighthouse. Shall we move on to Picks of the Week?
Yeah, this week I have kind of an education-oriented pick, but I guess anyone could make use of this website. It's called printablepaper.net, and it is a website with over 740 different page layouts that you can print in PDF format from your computer to make use of in your classroom or in your office, whatever your need might be. And they have it organized by different types of paper, and you would expect you'd find things like graph paper there and even music notation paper, those kind of blank pages that you can print out as many copies or make copies from as you would like. But they have some that are really useful, like I said, in a classroom setting. I was able to print out teacher block planning type pages.
Cool. Yeah.
And I found some printable paper games that I'm going to use with my kids in the classroom for just extra time and potentially project these PDF documents on the smart board and let them play these old-time paper games like dots and things like that on the smart board
with these PDF documents. Yeah.
They have score sheets for all kinds of games. They have a lot of templates for storyboarding, which as we talk about video with John or any other video type projects, it's nice to do some storyboarding where you actually plan out what scenes you're going to film or include in video that you're producing. So those kind of templates could be really useful as well. And the list goes on and on. There's just a wide variety of printable paper that you can get at printablepaper.net. So check it out, and especially teachers, if you're trying to find some things to use in your classroom as you're doing your final planning for the new school year, this may be a site you want to bookmark and come back to in the future even.
Cool. I'm just scrolling through. They have, looks like they have 740 papers you can download and print for free, or you can have a CD emailed or sent to you. But Yahtzee scorecard, in case you run out of those sheets. There's some stuff here for those people that are serving maybe as athletic directors in their schools. Basketball score sheet, softball score sheet, gradebook paper, all kinds of cool stuff here. This is a great resource. I really like your idea of putting that up on the smart board and kind of using it as a template and let the kids draw over the top of it. It's a great idea. So, very cool. printablepaper.net. My pick is for those of our listening audience members who are involved with their church database or records management in general, those people that are charged with keeping good order in the congregation. And that would certainly apply to most of our pastor listeners, but there's maybe some lay folks out there involved with the church database and so on and so forth. And that's a good website, a good records management website. Records management is a kind of a very dry topic, and but those that have to pay attention to what you do with all the documents that are created in a church and all the records that you create and store will find this website extremely helpful. We referred to this website in episode number 8, not as a pick, but just as a resource. I mean, I think I was in 08 sometime, if my math is correct. But this is on the ELCA site, elca.org, and we'll have a link to it. It's a big old long link, but we'll put it in the show notes. For records management for congregations, the ELCA has a director of records management and library out of their office of the secretary department for the ELCA. And they do a nice job at clarifying exactly what records should be stored and how long they should be stored for the typical congregation. So there clearly are things that you will want to store forever, you know, like your constitution and those kinds of things. But there are definitely other things that you'll want to destroy once their usefulness has expired, not just because you want to save space, filing cabinet space or disk space, but for legal reasons. So this would be a great resource, and I think that anybody involved with kind of the ongoing management of the church registry, those kinds of things would be very interested in this website. So that's from the Office of the Secretary of the ELCA, Records Management for Congregations. I often refer people here who have questions about this. And there's also a good section on archives, how you should treat archives and what should be archived in a local congregation, what should happen if a congregation is disbanded or if a congregation merges with another congregation, all kinds of useful information here. So take a look at this website.
Yeah, Martin, I'm noticing down near the bottom of the page they have a link to a document, and it's also available in PDF format, so you can download this document and print it in a nice format. But it goes through each and every type of record and gives you recommendations. So they've got everything from, you know, baptisms and confirmations and marriages through tax-exempt status reports, personnel handbooks. I mean, they just do a very thorough job, and they tell you how to take care of it, you know, in its current state and also final disposition of it, you know, whether you need to retain it or place it in your archives or put it in a fireproof location or, you know,
safety
exactly
deposit
what you
box,
need to do
et cetera.
With it.
Yep.
So,
good stuff. And they do this all, obviously, from the congregation's point of view. If you're really into records management and document management in general, and this comes up because I'm right in the middle of a project called ECM, or Enterprise Content Management, for the Synod, as we're going to be upgrading our Connect website, and we're going to be applying some of these best practices to it. So I'm right in the middle of records management conversations. One of the main sources for records management documentation is a website called AIM, AIIM.org. They're kind of the trade center for this kind of stuff, the de facto standard. They put out all kinds of governance and best practices documents and PowerPoints and Q&As and those kinds of things. So if you're worried at all that you're not in compliance or that you're not doing things the right way, definitely look at the ELCA website, but you also may want to look at aim.org.
You know, Martin, that's why I like listening to the WellsTech podcast. Who knew that there was a de facto standard organization for records management until now?
As of a couple of years ago, I didn't know either. So this is a learning experience for me, and it's important stuff, though. Again, a dry topic, but really important, especially in the litigious age that we live, and we want to make sure that we're keeping good records so that if they're ever called into question, we'll know where they are and that they're in good order, or to make sure that we're applying good best practices to how we do things and things are done decently and in order.
Well, very good.
Community feedback, shall we?
Yes, we heard from several of our listeners this week, starting with Steve Zambo, who's with Salty Earth Pictures. We talked about his new video series that was launched recently called PC's Take. Mm-hmm. It's Pastor Clark Schultz doing movie reviews.
I love that idea. That's a great idea.
Yeah, little short snippets. They're putting them out on YouTube as well as Facebook, and we'll have links in our show notes, because after we talked last week, Martin, they announced a new PC's Take for the movie Salt, which is kind of an action flick with Angelina Jolie in it. So if you're interested at all on what Pastor Schultz had to say about Salt, then you'll want to check out PC's Take, most recent launch.
From the Christian's perspective, I know they did Inception, which is a really popular movie right now, Toy Story 3. There was, I thought there was one other one in there as well. So definitely worth a look. And if anybody knows Pastor Tony Schultz, you know it's a intriguing or interesting presentation, to be sure.
Yeah. Little correction there. It's Pastor Clark Schultz.
I'm sorry. Clark Schultz, yes.
Yeah, lots of Schultz pastors, yes. Apparently. All right. Next up, we heard from Jason Schmidt, who's our tweeting teacher at JasonSchmidt123 on Twitter, and he shared several interesting links. First off, we want to send out congratulations to Jason because he's been selected as a Schoology.com blogger. Schoology is kind of a social networking twist to course management systems, online course management system,
right,
with a bit of a Facebook kind of feel to it. And Jason's going to be doing some feature blogging for Schoology on their website. So check out the link, and we certainly will be following you, Jason, and listening for what you have to say over there on the Schoology website. And at the same time, he also shared a couple of different PDF documents that we wanted to mention on the show. One is called, I have the link right in front of me, Tech Secrets. Welcome to the Secret Club of Technology Users. And this one is created by Maria Anderson, who does the Teaching College Math website. We actually interviewed Maria a couple of years ago, and she's a college-level mathematics teacher and does a lot of speaking and writing on using math concepts online, which is kind of a neat niche for her. And but this is more of a global cheat sheet for anybody that's really just kind of getting started with technology. Has a list of a lot of different keyboard shortcuts, has web browsing tips, and even a glossary of terms. So if you've heard the term embed or WYSIWYG and you weren't quite sure what that meant, Maria explains it here on this cheat sheet. So check that out. And you too can be in the Secret Club of Technology Users.
Make sure you get your bits and bytes straight.
And then he also shared a link to the Ultimate Guide to Gmail. This is from the website makeuseof.com, and looks like a really thorough Gmail document with probably about 30 pages, I think, of the history of Gmail, how to convert to Gmail, and why you should choose Gmail over another provider. So if you're toying with the idea of a Gmail account and want to get deep into it, then you might want to check out the Ultimate Guide to Gmail from makeuseof.com.
Very good. Appreciate that. I'm just looking through the directory of apps on makeuseof.com, and I think this is maybe worth further exploration. I had not heard of this site, but it looks like they have all kinds of cool web apps that they look at and so on and so forth. So, very cool.
So, perhaps we'll hear more from makeuseof.com in the future.
Yeah,
huh?
I'm thinking.
All right.
Although it seems to have crashed my browser, so...
Yeah, it seems like it's loading something on the page that's taking it a while. So be patient.
So wait for our heads up. Maybe. Because if something bad happens, we don't want to be held liable.
There you go.
We should maybe have a disclaimer about anything we say on this podcast, Sally.
Yeah.
We cannot stand behind anything here. Oh, now it's back. Okay. So it's safe. It's safe to go in now.
The water's clear.
That's right.
Okay. We also heard from Gail Potratz, who's from Emmanuel in New London, Wisconsin, and Gail shared a link to Museum Box, which is a new website. We'll have the link in our show notes. It's kind of a little bit convoluted URL, but it looks like a really interesting concept for classroom usage. Basically, they give you a blank slate, and it's like you're building a shadow box, per se, where you can put in images and video and all different things that you might display about a topic. And just to give you a feel for it, it says the site provides the tools for you to build an argument or description of an event, person, or historical period by placing items in a virtual box. What items, for example, would you put in a box to describe your life or the life of a Victorian servant or a Roman soldier, or to show that slavery was wrong and unnecessary? You can display anything from text file to a movie, and you can comment on other people's museum boxes. So all the teachers in the audience maybe want to listen up and make this a part of your planning for the coming school year around perhaps a book or a social studies lesson that you're working on. This might be a great resource to make use of.
Very good. I like it. I'm on the site now, and it looks like they've done a really nice job here.
Very professional looking. Mm-hmm. So, all right. Well, thanks, Gail, for that link. And the last link actually came from me, Martin. I was doing a little bit of surfing on the web this weekend and came across an article about a brand new touchscreen tablet PC. Very similar to the iPad concept, but very different in price tag and available not from Apple, but from Kmart, of all places.
Turn on the blue light.
Yeah, this is an Android-based touchscreen. It's made by a company called Augen. Augen, A-U-G-E-N, like, which I hadn't heard of.
Me neither.
And maybe that's for
that
a reason.
That should tell you something, yes.
Yeah, and I can't say that the reviews are very great on it so far. There's only three on the website. This weekend when it was announced, I didn't read any reviews, but this morning I do see a couple of written reviews and stuff, and they aren't just glowing, but what's amazing about this is that there's a competitor to the iPad with a price tag of $169. So iPads start at $500 and go up from there. Here's an Android based machine that's priced at $169.99, and so I can guarantee you that this won't be the last of the competitors mm-hmm. to the iPad. And,
I think we're going to see a flood of those.
Yeah.
It says you can watch movies in HD. I assume it's only Wi-Fi, but depending on your needs, this may fit a niche. Looks like it's a rechargeable lithium battery, so who knows what kind of battery life you're going to get there. But if anybody gets one. I had heard about this a while back, Sally, and it flew off the shelves. I don't know how many they made, 10 or 12 maybe, but now it's available online. So we should probably keep our eyes open and see what's going on here.
Yeah, it says in stock and available for shipping. So, but like I said, the reviews, if you read through them, aren't that glowing. Mm-hmm. Sounds like a couple of people already took theirs back to the store. So, I can't say that it's something we would even remotely recommend, except for the fact that the price tag is amazing, and I mm-hmm. think we're going to see more of this just in the next few months. I'm sure leading up to Christmas and all of that, people are having a big push to get these kind of devices out there. So,
but carrying case is included.
There you go.
So it has that over the iPad. All righty. Next week, we are hoping to stay out west and go to the California-Arizona district and talk to a podcast contributor, Marin McPeak. So we will keep you posted there. Certainly tune in next week as we continue our Wells Tech road trip. Again, if you have ideas for us or things that you'd like us to maybe mention on the show or topics that you'd like to discuss, please let us know. We have multiple ways for you to get in touch with us. You can reach us via our website, wellstech.wells.net, or email wellstech@wells.net. Or we'd love your voicemail, 405-4-WELLS. That's 405-367-9357. We're on Twitter. Both of us are on Twitter. I am M. Spriggs. Sally, you are...
Wells Tech Trainer.
Wells Tech Trainer. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/WellsTech. You can tag something on Delicious or Digo with the Wells Tech tag, or, as usual, the ever-popular Wells Tech listserv, and you can find that information, how to get involved with the listserv, right on our website.
Excited about this week's music, Martin. You selected the Branches Band for us, and I actually follow the Branches Band on Facebook.
Really?
And they have been doing a tour that has taken them all the way to Alaska this summer, and did several concerts up in Alaska. I just read this morning that they're back in Red Deer, Alberta, Canada, so they're heading back this direction. But what a neat way to spend your summer if you're in a band, to make a trip. A road trip to Alaska. Not something you hear about that often.
Yeah, all in service to the Lord. Great stuff. Yeah. We're going to play their song, The Name of the Lord, from their album, Sing My Tongue. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We will talk to you next week.
Shall run unto it, and they'll go forth.